This week on the Out of Your Mind podcast, I had the opportunity to sit down with Dr. Neetha Bhushan. And Neetha talks not just about her amazing story, she also shares the process of experiencing trauma and taking what you learn from your journey and moving forward in a way that allows you to be the best version of yourself. This is a fantastic episode, and you're not going to want to miss it. Let's dive in.
Hi, I'm Pam Godboys, ex-therapist turned self-development and business coach. And it wasn't that long ago that I was lost, not sure how to rewrite my own story of success. But fast forward through many failed attempts at an online business, and what I learned is that success really is an inside job. This is where the Out of Your Mind podcast was born. Applying the principles of mindset, spirituality, and all things woo, my guests will show you how this inner work is so critical to your business success. So if you are an ambitious entrepreneur or one in the making that is looking to make a major impact on the world, you are in the right place, my friend. Let's get started.
Neetha, thank you so much for being here with me today on the Out of Your Mind podcast. I appreciate your willingness to come on and chat about your story and tell us how that story has brought you to the work that you're doing today. Welcome.
Wow. Yes. So if your listeners are in for a journey. So I was actually born and brought up in Chicago to immigrant parents. My dad was from India. My mom's from the Philippines and in the city of Chicago, super melting pot, but they had the American dream. And so I was the oldest of two brothers, and life really growing up was for my parents really to help them live that American dream. So we were in all of the things, the piano lessons, the ballet lessons. It's a mix between tiger parenting and just like keeping up with the Joneses pretty much. And then I became a child caretaker at 10 years old. My mom got sick. She got pretty ill with breast cancer. And then from 10 to 19, I would then lose my mother, my brother a year later, and my father, all through medical diseases. And so the hallmark of my teen years was really plagued with a lot of trauma, a lot of confusion, massive grief, massive chaos. And that would, so at 19, not only am I orphaned, but I'm also now this caretaker of my youngest brother, who was 14 at the time. And two things that my parents really left me with was work hard, achievements are everything, accolades are everything. And so that would begin the decade in my 20s. And so it was, I don't want people, and this was the mantra in my head at the time, I don't want people to feel bad for me. I don't want to not fit in, because so much of my teen years was spent in and out of hospitals. It was, not again. So a lot of the pit in your stomach feeling when you know, shit, something's about to happen. Fuck, am I going to lose somebody else? And my coping mechanism became, in my 20s, overworking. I developed gut issues, which obviously I didn't know at the time was related to the anxiety, the constant anxiety that I was feeling in my day to day. And it was just survival. It was survival because I felt like I had to carry on this legacy for my parents. So what did I do? I did what any good girl, eldest daughter in the family would do. I became a dentist. And that really held me into my 20s until I would fully break down. And I got into a toxic relationship. My other coping mechanism was I didn't want to be alone. So meaning that I had abandonment issues. So I would really be codependent in relationships and often got into relationships that weren't the healthiest until I hit a rock bottom point. And it's one of the things that I talk about in my new book. It's called How to Fly Forward. And in the book, That Suck Now What, the framework Fly Forward, we have a fall. And so I had the biggest fall of my life. which was leaving haphazardly this abusive marriage. And this was at the end of my 20s. And seemingly everything on the outside was great. I had made all my family members proud. I had my dream profession. I was a cosmetic dentist. I had my practice. I had all the glitz and glamour of someone in my position who had gone through so much trauma, so much loss. She overcame it all. So I was the success story on the outside, but on the inside, I didn't know what my favorite color was. I didn't know who the fuck I was. I didn't know who the fuck I became because I was so afraid of what people were going to say, to judge. And that left me in a very dark place until I decided on December 31st, this was a decade ago now, that I would now begin to live my life for myself. And so it was not until that moment where then the walls became broken down, metaphorically. I asked for help for the very first time. I literally let myself break. And it didn't matter anymore what the world thought of me because I was living in so much paralyzing fear. And that would take me onto a journey, then would start my healing journey over then the next decade of life in my 30s. I was wildly successful in my dental business, and I started having more confidence building that in my career. But I was also focusing on myself for the first time. I sought healers, therapists, trauma workers, psychedelics, all of the things that you would think, okay, this is this coming home journey, because this is this coming home journey for myself. And it wasn't until then I decided to sell my dental practice, move across country to then begin this journey. And it was really being able to connect the dots in my life, which were all centered around grit and resilience, the grit and the tenacity to still stay on when things were so tough. But then I knew, you know, I had to heal a lot of my old coping mechanisms because a lot of times it led me to burnt out, and which then led me on a path to being such an advocate for mental health and emotional health. So much so that I started my first organization. It's called Independent Awakening. It was a nonprofit and it was geared to teaching women and girls the power of self-confidence and self-love. Because for me, what I was taught was love comes from loving other people and making sure their needs come first. Mom's in the room. And making sure their needs were probably last or didn't matter, because what I was born and brought up with in an Asian culture was as long as everybody else is happy, that's okay. And so I had to really learn the hard way of, wow, what about me? Where do I fit in all this? And that's when I started to unravel and unlearn. Dentistry may have been that path to keep me sane through those years of really heart-wrenching, fucked up shit. But then to come back into my own center and really aligning myself, which took me on a path into 45 different countries. I spent a ton of time with people who are excellent in their fields, whether it was in the jungles of Bali or in Cambodia or in with top researchers in Switzerland. Or I was just so curious as to how people move through difficult times and difficult situations. And did they even make time for themselves? And so then it had led me into finding my love of my life and my co-pilot and my now husband. And then we embarked on a journey of motherhood. And that's really that allowed me to spend the time really falling in love with the duality of both emotions. And now it's only that I've been on the other side of that to now really celebrate the contrast of me growing up in such chaos. Because the chaos that we had in the last few years, I'm like, oh, wow, okay, this is what so many people are reeling with. But thank God that I had the tools growing up, because then I was able to then grow our community at Global Grit. It's a mental health platform. You know all about healthy mechanisms for healing. But it was profound because we realized that we don't necessarily get that growing up. So that was really the impetus for this next book, which is That Sucked, Now What? And it's really this kind of, in my opinion, grassroots, where it's not like my first book that was geared to leaders. This was like, you know what? I'm in the mom space. It's just very, it's chaotic. It's messy. It's beautiful. It doesn't have to be the big T traumas that we grew up with. Yet, how can we savor ourselves in the journey? And how can we really create the magic even during sometimes the messiness of not sleeping, of losing your identity, of finding yourself again? And it's only because I've gotten to the other side of, in my opinion, some of the mini chaos that I can now integrate that and find the slivers of joy growing up through the pain.
Yeah, it's so interesting as you talk about this journey that you've been on. And I feel like so often there's no better teacher than of looking at our childhood than becoming a parent, right? Like you have this, you sit in the center of, oh my God, is this what I internalized as a child? What is going on here? And you have the opportunity to run headlong into that long before you were a parent, because you were put into the role of caregiver at such a young age with so much loss and so much.
Oh yeah. And I didn't do a good job, by the way. my little brother and I are now beginning that healing process, because I was parenting him the way that my parents parented me, which was study hard, good grades. We're in trauma, so we're not supposed to laugh. We're not supposed to have fun. I mean, I was awful. But I think it's the awareness, when you can be aware of, fuck, man, that must have really hurt the way that I treated you. And I didn't even know. And to have, I talk about this concept in the book of courageous conversations, but having more of these difficult conversations, mm-hmm. because when we break down, when we ugly cry it out, sometimes there's blowouts that can happen. But I think in the breakdowns of that messiness, therein lies the magic of the beauty of the repair. And now I always tell people, don't be afraid to have those difficult conversations. Don't be afraid to cry when you're speaking your truth. Hopefully you're doing it with tact. And that's a different exercise that I have in the book. But we're so afraid to piss people off. We're so afraid to not be liked. So we feel like we have to be so poised and so respectful. And of course, with certain cultures, we can't change that. That's just ingrained, especially even in my head. I go to an Asian house and I'm like, nope, not going to talk back to anybody. Nope, we're going to. But I think there's a way to convey your point across with dignity and respect and to be heard and to be understood. And that's really the bravery that I want to pass on to your listeners or whoever's resonating with this conversation, because we then internalize it. And what do we do when we internalize it? Oh, we become resentful and we become a raging bitch because we think somebody's going to read our mind. We'll do this with our partners and we'll get mad that the dishes are very tiny, but the dishes are not put away or in the sink or the garbage is not taken out. But if we just state our needs, then it doesn't become a blowover 2 months later. And, you know, what I've learned is that we have to treat people the way we want to be treated. In my 20s, I didn't even know what that meant. And now I just turned 40 this year. And my word for this year of being 40 is unapologetic. And it's unapologetic because even, and I love my mother-in-law, I love my aunt who helped raise my brother and I, yet their core values are still very much, it's just ingrained in them and I love them, but I'm not going to partake in their negativity sometimes of how crazy and terrible the world is because I don't see it that way. But I have to tell them, if you want to have this conversation, we can have it, but you have it with somebody else, not with me. I'm not that person. I just want to talk about X, Y, and Z, right? And so to let them know that, hey, I love you and these are my boundaries, to be unapologetic, again, teaching people how to treat you.
Yeah, I love that. And I love the recognition of, and I talk about this often, this idea that you can lovingly put boundaries in place. Like boundaries are healthy for everyone. they're healthy for me, they're healthy for you, they're healthy for the giver and the receiver. And so often we're led to believe, I think especially as women, that putting a boundary in place is selfish.
Yeah.
And then we get stuck in this place of, oh, I can't, that's self-serving, and that's, who's that helping? And I'm going to put myself last on that list again.
Absolutely, because we then go into our ingrained patterns of what we learned when we were younger. Oh, gotta obey. Big girls don't cry. And so we lean into that. And then we're like, okay, let's go into martyr syndrome or martyr archetype, where we're like, let me just serve everybody else, and then I'll be the last to serve. But then, and then we'll go into our spiral of the why me. There's, I talk about three mindsets in the book, of the victim mindset, of the why me, and then survivor. And survivor is, you know, you've obviously been through something. But then we get into, when we get into the thriving state, we no longer need that validation from other people. We can just be unapologetic in the way we show up and know that it's not the right flavor for everyone. And because it's not the right flavor for everyone, many times, and I'm sure, Pam, you probably recognize this too, is they respect you more because you're just living your best life and showing up in all of your audacity. And that's, I think that's an attractive quality to be at when you reach that season and stage of your life where you're no longer trying to gain anybody's approval or acceptance.
Yeah. And I think we know this as human beings, we like, our greatest fear is the fear of abandonment, right? Of rejection, which then leads to abandonment in our head, whether it's real or not. And whether it's the choosing of the person that's leaving or not, like with loss, when somebody passes away and you're like, they left me. I'm sure that your family members that you lost in that 9-year span did not leave you by choice, right? They weren't like, you know what we want to do to you? We want to leave you. But that's, it doesn't matter, because our internal world starts to create that story. And sure, starts to reinforce the story by getting into shitty relationships with people that treat you like shit. And you're like, see, I'm not worthy of all the beautiful things that other people have.
Yep. Oh, you're so right about that. That was definitely the internal story that I don't think I reconciled for probably until that rock bottom in my late 20s. And it was such a beautiful place to be, because that's when there's the five stages to fly forward. We first have that initial fall. So it could be a diagnosis. It could be somebody leaving you. It could be the sentence that you were afraid of, or getting fired from a job, whatever. You didn't get the promotion. Something unexpected happens. And then there is this stage two, is the ignition. And the ignition is, all right, there is a fire in your belly. For me, it was the last time I would allow my ex-husband to lay his hands across my face, right? And so it was, that situation has to be so dire or so life-opening that what are we going to do? Like getting fired, for example, how are you going to pay your bills? Kind of drives the impetus for change. And which then leads you to stage three, which is, okay, that's the rising stage. And the rising stage is, you know what? I don't care what is happening. I'm going to just take baby steps and baby steps forward. I'm going to take baby steps into discovering myself, discovering what I love, discovering who I am, discovering who I don't want to be hanging around with, who I don't want to be. And there is this acceptance of your reality. And I know that for myself, it was so hard to accept that was my reality when I was in that toxic relationship. I would often judge people who would be in toxic relationships, but I never, ever thought. And it was like the most painful thing to reconcile, but that's where the rising is. And that's where you start to gain more confidence in yourself, because, and even if you're going on new interviews to get a new job, or perhaps starting or practicing to start speaking your truth, if you were always afraid to share what's been on your mind, that is in the rising stage. And then in stage four, we get into the magnifying stage. And the magnifying stage is when we are now blossoming. We have found people that really support us for who we are. we have found acceptance, not only in our reality, but we're also forgiving ourselves. And that is the big thing. We're forgiving ourselves, which then allows for more expansion and even more learning. And then finally, we get into phase five or stage five of this fly forward framework is when we are thriving. And when we're thriving, we actually want to pay it forward for other people. We want to actually go on podcasts like yours, or even start a podcast or start a movement and say, you know what? I want to have brave conversations. I want to actually have conversations that are unfiltered and raw and real, because you want to just pay it forward for somebody else. For someone else, it could look like joining an organization or paying it forward, spending time after school, tutoring young people, whatever that is. But it's no longer about you. It's about the contribution that you end up making.
Love that. And the thing that I thought was, I love that framework, first of all. And one of the components that you talked about was like in this phase three, where you're living in a place of judging other people's relationships. Like you were in a shitty ass relationship. But you weren't seeing your own relationship. You were seeing other people's relationships. And you were probably saying things, because this is what most of us do. How can she stick around in that scenario? Or how can she tolerate that? Or what is, like, she's better than that, and whatever. And then we go into this place where we start blaming this person that's sticking around in this relationship. And then you get to the place where you just talked about, like in phase four, where you have to forgive yourself. There's a journey that goes along there, right? You went from judging other people, maybe not judging yourself out loud, but there's a silent process that happens of self-judgment. And then you have to actually do the work of forgiveness.
Oh, absolutely. And go for it.
I was going to ask, what was that like for you? What was that journey like for you to go through that process?
I think it's complex, right? And which is why I love the duality of emotions. And even in stage three, when you're rising, you are going to experience this duality of, okay, I am curious, but I'm also skeptical. Things are messy, but I'm starting to see the slivers of magic. I'm starting to feel more liberated every time I share my story, every time I share my voice. There are going to be moments of grief and sadness, and there are going to be moments of ultimate fun and excitement and joy. And I think in that process that you're talking about is, there is another framework that I talk about in the book, and it's understanding what your bounce factor is. And your bounce factor is really building your audacious resilience. And so there are two distinct frameworks in the book, but in understanding your bounce factor, the number one key that I talk about in the book is your RSA. And your RSA is your radical self-awareness. And your radical self-awareness is, we talk about awareness as such a cliche nowadays when we're doing healing work and growth. But what I really want us to know and take away, I had to wake up myself. I had to see and connect the dots on my own. It was nobody that was going to tell me, because I too was in that judgment. I too was going back from rising back into the ignition, back into falling. So it's not like a linear path in this framework. It's honoring where you are and honoring that there are days that you will magnify. There are days where you'll go back to that fall, that pity party, that victim state, because God, things were so bad. And so the awareness piece is for you to actually recognize and be truthful and go, oh, okay, yeah, that actually was me. And for me, it really took an outside girlfriend. It took a friend that said, Neetha, I see what's going on here. I see. And mind you, the first time this person, my girlfriend, said it, as we all know when we've had friends who are in toxic relationships, right? No, you just don't really like him. It's okay. And then you defend and defend. But it's the right time. It's the timing. So don't give up on your friends who are seemingly giving you advice. And the way that she did it this last time that really opened my eyes, she said, Neetha, I just want you to think about something. I was barely 30. And she said, you're barely 30. My parents are now in their 50s. And I would hate for you to keep walking on eggshells like I see my mom do around my dad, just because she's afraid of what other people think. And it was in that moment, of course, there were several others, but it was one of those magical moments that really left an imprint and really was the catalyst for me thinking, wow, do I want to be this way in 30 years from that point? Do I want to be hiding and in fear and in so much shame? Because it was almost like she took the blanket off over my eyes. She called the elephant out of the room, that in such a way that she didn't have to say, oh, I know what's happening here. It was such an underlying message. And I think for those listening who get frustrated because their friends are in these toxic relationships and you're like, God, she's doing it again. Why does she keep going for the same people? Have patience and don't give up on that friend. If my girlfriend, who always said certain things, if she had given up on me, I don't know. I don't know if we'd be having this conversation today. And so I think there's a chapter in the book around creating your soul support posse, your friendship circle, your community, and to really hone in on them and to really be able to, because they are your pillars of support. And I know that in the mom world, we have this like secret society that on any Facebook group, we are going to go in like, you need diapers size 3, you're going to, I don't know, Disneyland, you need a stroller to borrow. Like the moms are there to support with the physical stuff. But you all can actually do that as well on an emotional level, because we're all going through this journey similarly. And we all are having kids all at the same time. And that's what I think, that's the beauty of that support group, because we can call each other forward. We can say, what's really going on behind those doors? Like, I see that I notice some things. But again, to your question, it's the radical self-awareness. And that is a practice. That's a skill that we have to build and create with time.
Yeah. And it sounds like you're also saying the other component to that is you need to have a community that basically calls you on your bullshit.
Pretty much. They call you out.
Yeah. And I think that sometimes.
But they're not afraid, Pam. The thing is, they're not afraid they have to love you so much that they're not afraid even if you're going to get upset. Because there are some friends who probably never said anything to me until after, I always hated him, or I never really liked the way he treated you. And you've probably done that before. I've done that with girlfriends before where I didn't feel it was safe to tell them how I really felt. I didn't feel that they would receive it in the way that I thought. So I would hold back my words. And so that is that invitation for you to be aware and feel out if that person's really going through it. Sometimes they'll have to fall on their own, but what if you can plant a seed? And that's all we're saying is plant a seed. Don't give up on them. 2, 3, invite them out. Invite them out if you suspect something, so that you can remind them of their light. You can remind them of their confidence that they have within themselves and how amazing they are. One-on-one conversations, just like you and I are having right now, that is probably the most juicy, the most healing, the most nourishing that we can give to one another, and going deep and being vulnerable yourself. Like my girlfriend at that time, she was being vulnerable and she didn't have to share what really was going on with her parents. I never knew. That was a thing that she had told me, and she didn't have to tell me that was a toxic situation. She just was able to tell me that story.
Yeah. And I was going to say one of the things, and that's, you went right into the place where I was thinking that this need that we need to actually put an effort to make connections, to create these social support posses, because without that, and some of us like fear being vulnerable, and I see this often, and so they like friend group jump, or they don't really have their posse. They've hammered those things out because they don't want to be called on their shit. They don't want to have to be vulnerable. Having been a therapist for a very long time, that was me in my early days as a therapist. I was very comfortable in the role as a therapist.
Sure.
It's very easy. And it's not like this is a terrible thing, but it's more like this understanding that it's not going to get you where you want to go. And you need to have a community, and especially as moms, because there's such a unique scenario and dynamic that shows up for us as moms.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Like I honestly did not have the languaging of really celebrating the high highs and the low lows that we often go through as moms, because it was such a period of 9 years of such tremendous lows that I don't think people really experience in a lifetime, you know. And so for me to then experience extreme joy amidst the chaos, I was like, oh, wow, I'm not having like trauma or a trauma response of a phone call anymore. Like now it's, oh, okay, our doula or our doctor is just calling up to check in on us. And this was through the early days, the newborn haze days of me just healing. It wasn't as bad of when, yes, it was when my daughter or my son wasn't sleeping as much. But again, it's all relative. And I can still appreciate the magic in the messy instead of judging, oh my God, this is so terrible. This is so crazy, because I'd already been through the ringer in my youth that while my husband was having a difficult time of like a full transition into parenthood and then going from one to two, and we had differing levels of that chaos, it was something that I had more languaging around to then encourage other moms. And not that I'm invalidating anyone's feelings. I'm actually saying it can exist both at the same time. Yeah. Like you're loving this child, but you're like, why am I not sleeping for 5 days in a row at this point? And it fucking sucks. And to your point though, and I wanted to share this for whoever is listening that needs this, I actually created this guide. It's a 16-page guide, and it's how to actually create your soul posse. And the reason why this is so important is because if I didn't have, you know, who I had during the most monumental phases of my life. And I was just talking to a girlfriend that I've known since we were three. And she was like, Neetha, you realize you were doing this back when we were teenagers. You had people over because I didn't want to be alone. And I had to teach my young teenage friends, I was also a teenager, how to then treat me, even though they didn't know how to relate to having a friend going through all these losses. But there I was. She said, you were making these dishes when we were like 16 years old. You don't remember that? And I don't, because I've been able to create those posses in every outlet of my life. And my now husband and I have lived everywhere around the world. And it's such a true testament. This is really how we live our life. And for those who are curious, I want to start this. I want to be able to bring this to my community, my family. All you need is two other people to create a group. That's it. In this guide, I talk about how you can do this, the container that you can do this in. And when you get a copy of the book, basically, it's thatsucknowwhat.com. You also get a 12-month calendar, as well as, and it's a 12-month self-care calendar, and it goes through every month that you could actually create rituals and ceremonies just for yourself. And along with that, you get the soul posse guide. Yet the caveat is, get the book for yourself, for your sister, for your neighbor, because in order to create a posse, you have to be able to get the book for two of your friends as well, so that you can actually create your first little book club. And there's ways to do that. I show you how to actually sit in a circle, what questions to ask. So if you're like, it's so robust, because for years people have been asking, like, you're able to create all these beautiful experiences. And I don't do retreats on my own anymore, but this is something, such a give, because I think if we can deepen the foundation of our friendships, especially when we're in motherhood, because there's a lot to talk about. There's a lot. And the dynamics are so interesting, right? It's the dynamics between yourself. It's the dynamics between you and your partner, the dynamics between one or more of your children, and the dynamics between, if you have elder parents that are aging, these are all of these dynamics that, you know, many times, and for those single that are listening and not moms yet, or not moms, or maybe your kids are much older, it's even more important to, how are we going to replenish ourselves? Because at the end of the day, our tank is usually empty.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think so often, speaking to this point, I love this because so often we just don't know how to replenish our tanks. We live in a culture that is do and be busy and be overstimulated and be overwhelmed. And we connect by complaining and bitching about things. And those aren't necessarily the best foundations for a deep and meaningful connection that's going to support you through this kind of journey.
It's so true. Honestly, this is one of the reasons why the 12-month self-care calendar was born. And it was also why we decided as a community, people were DMing and asking all the time, how do you do this? And so literally, I created an entire guide for that. And you know, these are two incredible bonuses when you actually get three copies of the book. And yeah, and you're right. It's celebrating the joy that we see in other people. And the only way we can do that, let's just say that you want to be able to do this right now and invite two other girlfriends, and you can actually set a 2-hour window and perhaps even go through some of the things that we were just talking about. Like a lot of times we don't realize that we're navigating through some hard moments because we haven't had a chance to even reflect or have that downtime. But this is a container that you could actually create. And I go through all of the steps as to how to do it appropriately, where it doesn't become like a therapy session, but it's more like a supportive girlfriend session that you can actually create this so that everyone feels really nourished. And not only that, but heard. And I think that when we are able to articulate some of the most vulnerable moments, it definitely bonds you as a community, as a friend group circle. And you can actually do this with, I've actually done this with both my aunt and my mother-in-law. And it's fascinating if you're going to do this with your elders, because there were things that I learned about both of them that I had no idea, and it changes perspective. And so, you know, that other mom that you judged across the street or at the drop-off line or whatnot, she may be going through some shit that she doesn't have a support. Maybe that's why she's being that raging bitch. Or, you know, we often judge, but instead we should be like, wow, she probably needs support and she's not able to ask for it. And it's coming out because we've all been there in the form of like passive aggressive resentment as if somebody's going to read your mind. But no, we have to actually state our needs. And it's not being selfish, and it's not being mean, and it's not being rude. It's actually more mean to come up about it resentfully than saying, hey, I would really appreciate if you could actually take out the garbage and watch the kids for 2 hours tonight because I need to go and work out.
Right.
Whatever it is. Yeah.
Seems so simple, but it can be
so hard to do.
It's so hard. Yeah, it's so hard. Neetha, thank you so much. Where do you hang out online? How can people find you? How can they find you?
So yes, send me a DM. I'm on Instagram. That's where I'm at the most, at Neetha Bhushan. I'm also on YouTube, as well as, of course, one of the few still on Facebook left. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a couple of us old folks. Once you hit 40, right. You hang out on Facebook for a little while longer. Yeah.
Along with the aunts in my family. Yeah.
Correct. My mom's there. That's how I know. Thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it. We'll link up all the ways to contact you in the show notes. And yeah, this has been amazing. This has been amazing. And I can't wait to read your book.
Absolutely. Yeah. So all of the goodies you can grab thatsuckednowwhat.com, thatsuckednowwhat.com. And if, you know, you are struggling with managing your emotions, I have a free guide that takes you through how to get started. And it's based off of my first book, Emotional Grit. So it's globalgrit.co/EG guidebook. And that's completely for free.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Yeah, I look forward to seeing how this stuff unfolds. And guys, if there's anything specific, or if there are things, takeaways that you have and you want to DM or share that you're listening to this podcast on Instagram, please do so and tag us in it. And as always, thank you so much for being here. I appreciate the shit out of you guys, and I'll see you soon.
Hey, thank you so much for tuning into today's episode, and nice job on making it all the way to the end. Sticking around really speaks to your dedication and commitment to your own journey. So pat yourself on the back for that one. And like with any new venture, we truly believe word of mouth is so valuable in the growth process. So if you're enjoying the podcast, share it with your peeps. Share a photo or video of you listening on Instagram and be sure to tag us at Out of Your Mind with Pam. And so you will always know when new content drops, be sure to subscribe wherever you are listening to this episode. Thanks again for listening, and we will see you in the next episode.
One of the most effective things that you can do as a mom is you can learn to regulate your nervous system. Now, you might be thinking, Pam, how do I regulate my nervous system? Well, there's lots of different strategies, but one really great way to start to wire the brain for relaxation, for calm, for more peace, is to up your gratitude game. And that is exactly why I created a free email series just for you. The Ultimate Guide to a Grateful Life is 15 essential practices and prompts to cultivate a brain wired for gratitude, which will create for you a more abundant and a happier life and you. And all it takes is just a couple minutes a day. These are strategies that are proven to wire the brain towards rest and digest. And that is the side of the brain, the parasympathetic nervous system, that we want to be more active. This is where emotional regulation comes from. So grab your copy today by going to pamgodboys.com/gratitude and start wiring your brain for a happier, healthier life.